It's the Lifetime Body Podcast, where science meets common sense and where we help you make your body last a lifetime. Join physical therapist, author, and human performance expert John Zombro and inquisitive life-optimizing co-host PK the Incomparable as we explore the secrets of food, movement, sleep, ergonomics, and awareness in the pursuit of ultimate wellness. In each and every show, you'll learn how to look, feel, and perform your best so that you can live your longest, healthiest, and happiest life. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 31 of the Lifetime Body Podcast, where science meets common sense and where we help you make your body last a lifetime. So today's show is somewhat unique because we try to deliver the messages of ultimate wellness and performance in reverse fashion. So first of all, as you know, PK and I are two friends talking about health and fitness. In fact, we're talking about the mission statement of the Lifetime Body, which is to empower people to maximize health, fitness, performance, and longevity. And today we're going to be only slightly sarcastic and facetious, because we want to look at the loud, clear, basic messages which research and experience have shown to be detrimental to the human lifespan and health span. This really is the low-hanging fruit. It's the don't do's before we even add in the do-do. We're going to look at the five components of the lifetime body: ergonomics, sleep, movement, food, and awareness. In that order today for no particular reason, and identify what are really the major things to avoid unless your goal really is to hasten your demise from lifestyle practices.
Yes.
PK, good morning.
In a big way. Hey, Jay-Z. Good morning. Yeah, today's all about, you know, what you can do if you want to perish early. And I think that It's a funny and hopefully like an engaging way to frame this discussion, but I think that when I went through what we're going to talk about today, I wasn't surprised, but it really brought into the light how many of these things are part of the everyday life, or just maybe even considered a given, kind of in this sort of this Western way that we're approaching our day-to-day business now in these five areas. So I'm excited. Today we're going to dole out loads of faux, costume, and imitation wellness pearls. So pay attention.
I'm on the tips of my toes at this time. And so the very first thing we'll talk about today, ergonomics. I mentioned before that ergonomics, it's really one of those roots of physical therapy and certainly my training and work experience. And I want to really try to help everyone to understand and embrace the word and see how they can utilize it as a power lever for their life and health. So how can ergonomics help you to die early? Well, here's what you do. You sit all day with poor postural alignment, ignore the pain, and grind through your work.
Right. So, I mean, Jay-Z, you maybe just described, you know, or I mean, you certainly did millions of people's actually everyday existence when they go to work, especially.
Yeah. And it's not a character attack by any means. It's just, this is what happens to all of us. The drive mechanisms are very strong to pull us into those behaviors. So again, you know, we were talking about chronic sitting with no breaks, not having the best posture, feeling some discomfort, but plowing on through and kind of doing the same thing with work output. So the first thing, you know, that I would talk about is when we sit without moving at all for long periods of time, that's a chronic or static position, which causes metabolic stasis and actually stagnation in our tissues.
So what's that mean? I just want a better understanding of just kind of like what, maybe in layman's terms, what that happens inside the body.
Yeah. So everything that we do in our bodies, it's like a highway, you know, it's like a commerce situation. And so we always want to have the blood flowing and the lymph vessels flowing and all those sorts of things. Well, when we sit for too long, the blood starts to pool in our extremities in particular, and we don't get what's called venous return, or the blood coming back to, and entering the circulation and keeping all the metabolic functions going. And so basically we start to have that blood pooling. And so the waste products of just everyday metabolism, what our cells are doing, starts to build up because it's not getting cleared. And at the very same time, we're not bringing in fresh oxygen and other nutrients to our tissues.
Interesting. Okay. So what else happens when we just kind of sit all day with improper alignment and ignore what's going on, just grind away?
Sure. So there's that effect of the chronic position, the static position, but then we go into posture. And if we have postural deviations, and so in other words, you know, we humans do have sort of a universal or elemental design where, you know, we're made to function all day against gravity. And if we stack up our blocks of our spinal vertebrae or align ourselves in such a way that it's fairly normal, we have high tolerance. But if we're sitting and leaning forward and staring into a screen and we've got a rounded upper back and what's sometimes called a forward head posture, and there are other things that we could have with that, all of a sudden, the effect of gravity is magnified. So the load on our tissues, or what we call in physics a stress strain curve, just goes berserk. And we really can shorten our health and comfort and possibly even life by leaning into the screen a bit too much.
Okay. What else happens when we
sit
too long?
Let's say you've been doing that for a while. You're sitting for a long time and your posture's not so good. So the strain is happening at certain tissues, and you know, we know where those things are. You know, it's like the between the shoulder blades, or it's the back of the neck, or some different places. And all of a sudden, there's an ache, a soreness, a burning sensation that we become aware of. Well, it should be called burning because that's inflammation. Well, if you ignore that and think, I'll just take some, over-the-counter anti-inflammatories later or whatever, there's going to be a high price to pay oftentimes for days, and even more chronically with inflammation and damaged tissues.
Okay. What I know there's one more item on this list, and then I've got a big question for you, but get through that one first.
Okay. So the last thing we talked about there is grinding through work. In other words, we kind of work at a steady base flat line for hours and hours, and doing that can actually increase errors, decrease our creativity, and ultimately impact our productivity, as opposed to interval based, training or work where we do, a focused bout, we recover for a little bit, take a trip to the water cooler, whatever, and repeat, lather, rinse, repeat.
Right. Even fidget a little bit. That's something that you've advised is, that's the body's sort of natural, regulatory saying, like, move around a little bit. You've been too still.
Oh yeah. And that's, we see that, it's so endemic in our schools. You know, we tell kids to sit still, and a lot of times that really goes against how the human is designed to function. And there's also a lot of research that supports that behavior and learning can be enhanced if we're encouraged to fidget and move a little bit, as opposed to staying rock solid.
Got it. So if you add all these up in terms of ergonomics, how does this shorten the lifespan? I mean, what's the sort of, if you're just kind of describing the sum total framed in the context of our conversation today, how does this sort of shorten our time, or even more, just kind of, make our bodies not last a lifetime, in other words?
Yeah, I'd say chronic inflammatory states are propagated, enhanced, accelerated. So when we do these things, we tend to have more systemic inflammation, not just say in the upper back or something. And that presence of the chronic inflammation sets up, our body's going to be producing more what are known as reactive oxygen species, and that causes all sorts of cellular damage. Vessel disease and organ diminishment, and the list goes on and on. So we can just change up some of our ergonomics to avoid the chronic inflammatory exposure.
Got it. Okay, so that's the first bucket. We're gonna move on to the second one, which is sleep. And so if we were putting this together, we're saying, all right, how can we dial in our sleep So we're actually less well rested, and ultimately we have fewer nights on this earth to sleep because we're not going to live as long.
Yes. And you know, I'm going to be a bit more brief than I was in the last one. And I'm actually going to answer a similar question to the finale you did in ergonomics right now, as I answer your initial question. So, not sleeping causes metabolic dysregulation. It whacks out all of our hormones. And so our bodies start to store fat instead of burn fat and not repair muscle and damaged tissue and lose alertness. And the list is long. And so how do we do that? Well, if you stay up late consistently under bright lights and take your device into bed with you, you're almost ensuring a shorter lifespan with a dysregulated metabolism.
Man, Jay-Z, I mean, this is, that sounds perhaps even oversimplified, but I think I know this is something that I struggle. I'll be real honest in my life. Like if there's one component that, kind of seems elusive, it's the sleep. But then when you kind of take a step back, you know, your simple prescription there, I don't always follow that. And it's to my own detriment.
Yeah. And we're all in this modern world together. So we do have things we do in the evening. We have lights. Sometimes we need them to be less than dim. And, you know, we use our devices for so many things. So, it's not like it's always easy. However, it is amazing when we change that up a bit, you know, the length and the quality of sleep and just the energy and zest for life goes up so much. So being up too late, what it does, I mean, I think everyone recognizes this, it alters their circadian rhythm. So our bodies are, you know, programmed genetically to know to get sleepy as the sun sets, and usually we retire within several hours or should. Not doing that compromises all these rest, repair, and metabolic regulations that we go through, particularly in the brain. There's actually a cleanup of waste products in the brain via what's known as the glymphatic system. That's like lymphatic with a G in front of it, which is unique to the brain, and it only happens during our sleep. So we really need to, be sensitive to that.
Got it. What else is going on when we don't get good sleep?
Well, the bright lights in particular, and we talked about this last week, I won't beat that to death, but when they're bright lights like UVs or LEDs, they have a lot of the blue light wavelengths in them. And that is a signal for the body to stay alert or wake up. And so it diminishes the secretion of melatonin, which is our sleep-enhancing hormone. So again, the bright lights work in conjunction with being up too late, but they each have slightly unique effects. And then maybe the last thing, is because I was trying to be brief, although I'm excited, is devices. So, you know, we recognize that most of these devices have these screens, you know, which emit blue light. And of course, some of the screens, you know, we can put filters on them and we can use the blue light blocking glasses that we've talked about. But there are other factors as well, and they're fairly powerful. These small devices emit fairly strong electromagnetic fields, which have been shown to keep us awake for one thing. They've also been shown to cause damage to our mitochondria and even our DNA, being close to electromagnetic fields constantly. And the other thing that they have, which is really fascinating, the research really supports well, is what's known as a distraction stimulation. So the fact that the device is there, even if it's turned off or it's on airplane mode, it's next to you, that's the point. We actually have less quality sleep than if the device is in another room.
Wow. I think that, I tell you what, I mean, and you know, first of all, you don't have to apologize for being excited. That's what we're all about on this show. But again, no judgment, but when you kind of take a step back, this is some relatively simple but powerful stuff that can either improve or like really have an impact on your health, wellness, and longevity.
Absolutely. So jumping right into the next one. So we were talking about our five TLB components, and we've hit ergonomics and sleep. Now let's take a look at movement. And movement's that big umbrella when, let's say, you're not stationary. So movement, or a lack thereof, is really a key to the die early plan. if we can find every way possible to use modern transportation and cling strongly to the belief that exercise isn't for me or isn't for you, we can shorten our lifespan just by not moving much.
Right, right. And one of the reasons why I chuckle is that this is just so absurd and ridiculous, but it's pretty commonplace. So what happens when we're not moving?
Well, when we use cars and trains, I won't say planes because sometimes, you know, you can't get from where you can, point A to point B, sometimes when you need to, unless you use a plane. So let's say that's sometimes an inevitable, but using cars and trains and, subways and buses and what have you, when we could walk or bike or ski, if you're in certain places, robs us of our GDA opportunities. So everyone remembers GDA is our word here at TLB for general daily activity. And when we get robbed of that, we really get robbed of health and life and vitality. So my suggestion would be find a way to factor that time in whenever possible. And with your movement, find a way to make a difference, not make an excuse.
Right. And I don't have a fitness tracker, but I'm usually have my phone on me. And it's pretty interesting when it doesn't happen very often anymore after applying, some of your techniques, but maybe I'll have a day when I was sick recently and I didn't really move at all. And I looked at the sort of the movement on my phone and I had moved, I think a quarter of a mile for the entire day. And it can happen if we can get caught up in all of our sort of modern existence, we can end up just not really moving at all.
Yeah, and I think that's, it's compounded by some of the jobs we have, or even sometimes when traveling long distances or across country or internationally, the opportunity to move is limited. So you have to be more creative, but there always is a way. And so that's general daily activity, very important, non-negotiable. We all need to be, getting that in, whether you use a tracker or not, every day. Then the next thing under that umbrella of movement next to GDA is exercise. And exercise, when done properly, it can add to the health benefits of our general daily activity because it provides specific forms of fitness. But not exercising, that really it really is not desirable for most of us.
I mean, I think some of the term that you used is non-negotiable. That's not like a character judgment or a personal philosophy. I mean, we're talking genetically in the body. Your body, you don't get to make compromises. It says if you don't move, this happens. It's a cause and effect that goes on just behind the scenes internally.
Yeah, and I think you hit it there. Our genes demand exercise. So, there are some very long-living people around the world who have never exercised a day in their life, and they're very long-living. That is indeed true. But they're highly active, and they may be doing a lot of, activity that sort of crosses over into the exercise realm. But specifically, where I look at exercise, it's, when you need to maintain that mobility to, lift your arms overhead to get something off the shelf or to get down on the ground and back up again to play with your grandkids or to pick those kids up. That's an exercise or fitness parameter that we should and could condition for.
Absolutely. So then you're talking about exercise. What happens, we talk about exercise, how it dovetails with fitness, and then when exercise really fails, what happens there in your opinion?
Well, I think most failure with exercise, and that's a strong word, sure. Take that any way you like, but it's due to poor fit and poor programming. And so, that's sort of one of the missions with all the work that you and I are doing and that, like, obviously the Animal Fit program, is a body type specific training program that helps people to do that in lots of ways. But, whether you use the Lifetime Body or any other resource, coaching, you name it, it's important to get help to find a way to do something that fits you, fits your body and your goals, that you love and that works for you. And that's the way to succeed with exercise. So, exercise failure is really a result of, a lack of, creativity and good science and maybe involving good professionals when that's indicated.
Absolutely. Bad programming or just, you know, we talk about this with Animal Fit. Obviously this is, you know, something that you created that I've applied in my own life. And it's, you know, just small plug here for when, whatever the programming and the understanding fits who you are personally, there's a real joy and pleasure. And it's not even really about success or failure. It's just feels right.
Yeah, totally. And so on a slightly more serious note, if you need a little help designing your optimal movement program or you want to bring that kind of knowledge to your workplace as a wellness workshop, take a look at the Lifetime Body options there under services. You know, there's coaching and consults and all sorts of workshops and presentations, which really, you know, this podcast is always free. This is where we give, you know, the information, share it with the world. But, how I get from day to day and get down the track is doing that. So I'd be honored to work with you if you'd like to hire me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we're just going to go right into our fourth component, which is food. And I'm going to frame this for you, John. For someone that wants to perish early, how can food fuel their early demise?
Well, eat crap.
I hear the pause in your voice. It's almost, even though it's absurd and we're framing this in a funny way, it's hard for you to say, it's hard for you to prescribe what to do that'll actually hurt someone. I can hear it in your voice.
Yeah. And so let's have some fun with this, folks. So, okay. Crap is junk food, you know, garbage, it's all that stuff that we're always talking about. And we should be always talking about because it's everywhere. And so this chronic high level consumption of foods that are rich in the big three disease drivers, and you know that to be refined and processed carbohydrates like flours and starches, straight up sugars, and these industrial seed oils like cottonseed, sunflower oil, etc. So that we know that. And then, you know, we have to say, hey, thanks a lot, big ag, big food, big business, big government, big medicine, because every one of those industries is telling us to eat this stuff one way or another, and making money off of us doing it. So, you know, enough is enough. And, you know, that's my first point.
Right. And I think that you want to bring us back to the 70s. I think you have a story to share.
Oh, I love the 70s. So
yes, you do.
I'm a young teenager, and it's the 70s, and I'm in a public restroom. And, you know, at the time, you know, we didn't have smartphones back in those days, and there wasn't maybe there's much to do. So, what a lot of people did was they explored their artistic abilities on bathroom walls. And, you know, we didn't have Sharpies then. We had a thing called a magic marker, and there was also the Bic pen, which we still have today, as everyone knows. Well, it was quite popular. I imagine more in the the men's rooms than the ladies' rooms. This is just a guess on my part. For various words of wisdom, and other advisements to be written on the walls. So here I am, the teenager in the 70s. I look on the wall and I see this for the first time. It says, eat and die, mother. And I didn't beep that out, but I think everybody's got what I was saying. Well, a wise seer, perhaps, because here was a person that said, eat and die, mother. And I chuckled at the time, but I'm not laughing anymore because we've had about a 50 to 60 year experiment in this country that's indeed what happens. If you eat enough of that stuff, you do die sooner. And it's really sad.
It is sad. And I think that, it's prevalent. Like you talked about all the different cultural and sort of, I guess, marketing influences out there. When you do eat the crap, what happens inside the body when you do put that sort of tainted fuel into your engine? What's going on internally?
It's really interesting because not only are those things devoid of the nutrition that we need, such as, you know, various micronutrients like vitamins and minerals and essential amino acids from protein or essential fatty acids, most of they're empty calories. But they tend to have an effect, again, causing this hormonal imbalance that leads to metabolic dysregulation. So we we end up raising up insulin and cortisol beyond cyclic or normal levels that we're supposed to have, we tend to drive down various other functions that we depend upon. That's at our kidney level, at the level of the liver, testosterone levels drop. All sorts of things happen from regularly consuming these metabolically dysregulating garbage foods.
Wow. And I mean, that is not a short list that you just walked through there. And okay. So we're not going to get bogged down, because that can be kind of a depressing moment in to consider about how that nasty food can really, make you die early. Let's move on to the fifth component. Let's talk about awareness. So the way that I framed this was, John, how can awareness, which is the fifth component of the TLB system, be the nail in your early coffin?
Well, I would say, by all means, fret over the past, worry about the future, and always think, what's in this for me?
Interesting. Okay. So break it down for me. How can being more aware, or in this particular case, being less aware, how does that affect you physiologically in terms of longevity, health, wellness, performance?
Yeah. So, we hit a couple of things in that diatribe there. And so we're back at mindfulness again. And mindfulness really, however you want to interpret it, it's focusing on the now. It's more beneficial. And when we do that, we operate or function optimally. Now, I think the way you asked me was, how do we drive that nail in the coffin by not doing that? Well, by fretting over the past, worrying about the future, and even by, being less concerned for others, we start to have high levels of stress, which throws off our cortisol, our epinephrine, norepinephrine levels, among others. And so our body gets into this chronic fight or flight. And that should sound wrong just saying it that way, because fight or flight, we are wired. We're designed for that to happen occasionally, to be instantaneous. Something happens, we deal with it, we recover, we move on. It doesn't happen again for a while. But this modern life, in doing a lot of those things, kind of sets up a chronic buzz of stress. And that's simply not how we're designed to operate.
Right. Chronic buzz of stress. That's a great way to describe that. And I think that we've talked about this on the show, and then just, you and I talking in the past, the body doesn't care about where the stress comes from. It interprets that and it has a reaction to it. So yet again, it's not a, this isn't a comment on modern life or stress or work stress, et cetera. It's what's the physiological result in the body, and it's not good.
Exactly. And kind of supporting that last point about, say, what's in it for me, or just mainly not thinking of others, being overly self-centered or even sometimes mean, that can limit joy. It can limit meaningfulness and contribution in life. And that's all proven to decrease happiness and lifespan. The idea here is we're not really doing things for others or serving society because we know it's going to make us live longer or be healthier. We're doing it because it's the right thing to do and it feels good. And, that's really, I think, those basic human principles that we always want to stay rooted in.
Sure. And I mean, awareness in particular, it works with all the components together, because if you're just kind of tuned in to just overall, just paying attention more, being curious, and, looking at, just taking a step back, new information, knowledge, you can apply this to all the different components. So, all right, John, we're going to turn the corner here, and we're going to say, all right, let's say folks have been listening and they're like, I don't actually want to perish early. What is your just simple high level? Where's a good place to get started to maybe make some changes and do some different things?
Yeah, let's go straight to the basic principles of the lifetime body. So we have these operating principles that we've alluded to. Actually, we did two shows previously that you can search out, and I think they're very informative. But I want to share three things, and the first is to practice moderate consistency. So what that really means is in all your wellness behaviors, hey, you know, the literature is fairly strong that if you do 80% of your stuff, approximately 80% of the time, you get 95%+ of the potential results. So, you know, you can really do a lot of good things with your health habits without being perfect and getting stressed out over that.
John, I'm glad you said it like that. You don't have to be perfect. Just, you know, just get it right. Get it close to right 80% of the time, and you're getting 95% of the benefit. That for me, that's a moderate consistency that really helps me, especially when I've, you know, strayed just slightly off the path, that it allows me to get back on and say that wasn't a big detriment, you know, if you're doing things most of the time well.
Yeah, and that feeds right into the next one, which is no self-loathing. So practice no self-loathing. You know, don't beat yourself up. It's not worth it. And, you know, we want to come at things more from a positive than a negative. It's like, you know, I'll love myself when I finally reach my goal weight. No, you're an awesome person. Hey, love yourself right now, just like I do love you. And you know, that's not being overly quixotic or Pollyanna, or, you know, whatever. But no, was that a Toto song? Rosanna. Okay, back to thing. No self-loathing.
You know what? That can be a tall order. And in just this world that we live in, it's almost like we're pitted against ourselves. And there's a ton of mirrors where we have this kind of maybe expectation that's unrealistic. I think that just continually bringing that up and then being connected with the community. And, you know, I'll say this in regard to you, John, like this is something that just, you know, our friendship helps me to not self-loathe because of the positivity and, you know, really the principles that we talk through there's a guide you towards just being positive and loving yourself and accepting. So I think that can be a tall order. I don't think that we want to say that it's not, but it's a huge component of just giving yourself a pass, and then it creates a space for new and different things to happen.
Yes, thank you. And you know, you're really teeing up these things today to segue. And you know, it was you not too long ago who reminded me of a phrase: "A rising tide lifts all ships." And I was like, yeah, man, you're right. And so that's how we try to roll. And I think it really does work, and it's well substantiated. So this last thing is respect others. So if we have moderate consistency, no self-loathing, and just, you know, respect others, find a way to not always be quick to want to judge or think negatively about what someone else, you know, says, does, is, you know, there's no gain to be had from that. And if we can maybe not agree with always, but respect another's position, like happened recently with, you know, some of the food talks that we've done, I think we all gain from that.
Absolutely. There's a discourse that happens. There's community. There's all of the, you know, all the benefits that go along with that. So, all right. So, I mean, kind of step back. You know, we talked about what doesn't work. There's a ton of information on thelifetimebody.com and in all your works about more information on each of these individual topics. So basically, if your curiosity is piqued, you can dive in either with any of the works, or you can, these are things that you talk about with your client when you have consulting like arrangements, or when you're connecting with someone based on their goals, right, John?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is exciting. You know, it's an exciting time for me because first quarter is usually my most dynamic of the year. You know, I'm usually quite busy with the consults and coaching as people are launching off their programs. But it's also the time when most of my, you know, like on-site workshop stuff and presenting and conference work is happening into the second quarter as well. And so it's very stimulating and energizing for me to, you know, engage with folks on that. And again, much more to come, you know, as soon as I can get, you know, my time organized a little bit more, you know, more materials are coming out, you know, website's getting new enhancements, and the whole idea is that most of that stuff's going to be free just to help you 10x it at life. And isn't that what we're all here for? Yes.
Absolutely. I think that's a good segue into how we're going to wrap up today. you got a review of the week, and it came to you from way down in the Lone Star State. What is that review?
Yeah, so this one, it came as an email from Jason from Houston. I think it's catchy, you know, Jason from Houston. But it's a compliment and a question, and it came via email, perfect for today's show. So I'll try to tackle that, and we'll see where we can go with it. So Jason writes this. He says, "First of all, thanks for a great podcast that I've really been enjoying. You guys provide a nice mix of topics that I care about. The show is helping me to think more about the simple things I can do in life to feel and perform better and to understand the science behind these practices. However, what I struggle with often is feeling overwhelmed and trying to fit in all my activity and training." And he has in parentheses here, "I'm an Olympic distance triathlete." Without feeling chronically exhausted and broken down. Are there any tips or suggestions you have for maximizing my recovery and keeping my energy levels high?
John, first of all, amazing, you know, thank you. Appreciate the kudos there. And then segueing, you know, as you just read that this is a common question that Jason's sort of grappling with. And I can't wait to hear your answer.
Yeah, and I should say right away that I've already had a couple of email exchanges with Jason, and you know, he's given me some more information, and I gave him a little more response than the one I have right here. But this is a nice review for Jason if you're listening, and also for everyone else. So, again, I say, hey, thanks for the comments and for teeing this up. Obviously, we could do several shows on just that topic of life balance and recovery and training and adaptation, but I have a few ideas to share. First, Jason, it sounds like you may be overtraining or simply over-juggling life a bit. And PK, feel free to interrupt me as I roll along at any point with this. This is really for the audience. I know that's tough for everyone, this juggling of life. I'd look at this as a stress balance equation. And, you know, you can picture those kind of those old time apothecary scales, and, you know, that one side goes up, the other side goes up. That's really what we're looking at with stress balance. And the key for Jason and for maybe anyone else who's had some of these issues is to bring down your stressors wherever possible, recognizing that's not always easily identified or easily accomplished, but again, trying to bring those down and then raise up your recovery support wherever that's applicable. And obviously we talked about some of those things today, like what you eat and how you sleep, among others. So this might mean for Jason, make sure that your training is appropriate for your goals, your current health and fitness status, and specifically your lifestyle right now. If you have a busy job and several young children and some other things, it's really tough to maximize training when it becomes a fifth priority as opposed to a first. And I think it is important to have, you know, family and career first sometimes, or maybe family all the time. But nonetheless, make sure that your diet is not pro-inflammatory. So in other words, getting the big three items that are in junk food out of your diet as much as possible. Bring down that level of reactive oxygen species and hyperinsulinemia that we're always talking about. And do know that a lot of the so-called sports products, you know, energy bars and drinks are junk food. And that, you know, the marketing has been so strong to lead us to believe otherwise. That's hard to hear, but it is indeed the case. Jason, what you want to do is tune back into your sleep hygiene. We've gone over several times on this show those little tricks that you can do to get better sleep. And really, that's where everything starts. And nothing works or takes unless your sleep is doing well. Take a look at your work, your workflow, your ergonomics, and also your relationships. Find places to improve the flow state and have less of the fight state. So this is all basic in general, but that's really what works, the basics, and lays the foundation.
Yeah, John. I mean, two things that I'm listening to there. One, there, especially with triathletes and all the, just like you said, the training products and the nutrition on the go, about how they can be pro-inflammatory. Mm-hmm. And that's a little lesson that I learned there. And then just about setting your goals and having that additional load of the training when there's a ton of other, you know, potentially, you know, competing priorities in terms of life organization. Those are both stressors that are just kind of baked into if you've got a ambitious program. So that's kind of from the top level. What would you say specifically with the training in regard to this question?
Yeah, so when I look at training, a lot of times I'll use some terms which I'll borrow from pharmacology, believe it or not. So more specifically, you know, for Jason, you always want to look at your training in a dose-specific manner. So in other words, right now, you've got so much going on, what you really want to do is try to achieve the minimum effective dosage. Or the least amount of training that, you know, you can mentally tolerate doing. You know, you're probably highly motivated. You want to do more, but do the least amount that you can to still feel like you're, you know, you're putting in a bit of time and getting, you know, working towards goals and results. That's much more wise when you're feeling run down, and see if that helps your body to rebound. The whole idea is training is a stress or stressor just like anything else, but it's one that we have more control over. We can manipulate what we choose to do. And oftentimes, when we're really motivated, and that's usually all of us from time to time, we end up doing the opposite, which is using the maximum absorbable dosage of training or even exceeding it too often. And so, you know, that's really, there's an art form, and that's where I think, you know, a good coach can help you, you know, to figure that out. But you also are, you know, you have these inner wirings or this instinctive wisdom as well. So, you know, I hope this helps, and good luck, you know, with your training and life.
Absolutely. And some, John, that you've mentioned, I've mentioned it on this, on the show before, is just that especially highly elite athletes, they rest and recuperate like pros as well. So it's not just, you know, the videos of the, you know, the CrossFit games or whatever. It's when the camera's not on and they're truly resting and recuperating just as hard as they're working out.
Yeah, you've got to take all those practices seriously when you want the highest level of performance. And so, you know, I used to say this a lot to a lot of my athletes is recover hard.
Recover, you know, hard, like, exactly.
Put as much energy into recovering as you do into training. Sometimes maybe even more in recovery and less in training will get you better results. But it's tough to convince people of that. So at the very least, recover seriously and intent with good intention, and you'll never be sorry.
Absolutely. And well, John, I tell you that's interesting. I love that question. And, you know, again, love the comments. If you like what you hear, get out there and, you know, rate, review, 5 stars helps us out on Apple Podcasts. And, why don't you take us home for the episode?
Yeah, well, all I've got to say is thanks again, folks, and keep doing what you're doing. We are really having a great time with this, and we really appreciate you. So have a great day and a great rest of your week.
Adios.
Thank you for listening to the Lifetime Body Podcast. If you'd like more information on the Lifetime Body publications and services that can help you to achieve ultimate wellness and look, feel, and perform your best, check out thelifetimebody.com. And if you're digging this content, please leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to the show and share it with your friends and family. Until next time, this is the Lifetime Body, where science meets common sense and where we help you make your body last a lifetime.